The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
As we head into hour two, Thursday, November 19th, 2020, kind of tying together some of what I was thinking about in my opening monologue just exactly an hour ago, it is a delight to bring to the show one of my favorite people, really one of my favorite people in the whole country, and that's John Cribb, historian, educator, and author, most recently of the book Old Abe, a novel. John, happy Gettysburg Address Day.
Happy Gettysburg Address Day, Seth. It's good to be on. Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you, sir. Thank you. And let me just tell the audience, if they're looking for a Lincoln book, Old Abe, a novel by you, is one we commend strongly. And we're not alone. I believe an Indiana man recently wrote you saying it's the best book on Abraham Lincoln he ever read. Am I wrong about that?
Yeah, can I tell that story real quick?
Go right ahead, please.
Still kind of on cloud nine about it. I was on the phone with a cousin last week, and I kept getting this call that I was ignoring because it was a 202 area code, which is, you know, Washington, D.C.
Not important. They can go to voicemail.
Right, But it was very insistent, so I looked at it a fourth of the time. I looked at it, and I just my memory from being in living Washington just tugged at me, and I realized, that's the White House exchange. I better take that. So I took it, and it was the vice president's office, and they said, can you talk to the vice president? I said, anytime. And they put me on hold, and he came on, and he said, John, and I've never met him, but he said, he tracked me down. He said, I just have to tell you, I finished reading Old Abe last night, and I just loved it so much, I had to call you and tell you. And he's a huge Lincoln buff.
You bet.
You know, he wrote his college thesis on Lincoln.
Yeah.
He's from Indiana, where Lincoln grew up. Big Lincoln guy. So we talked for about 10 minutes, just, you know, two big Lincoln geeks on the phone talking about Lincoln and the book.
There are a few things I would want my vice president talking more about than Abraham Lincoln. That's really cool, John.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, congratulations. It's well-earned and well-deserved. Gettysburg. You write in a column that was published in the Post and Courier, you write that Lincoln was speaking at Gettysburg in an address that was less than 300 words, right? He was speaking to more than just the dedication to those who lost their lives there. And he was speaking at first to the North, but really to the world, wasn't he?
Yeah, he really was.
Talk about that.
He was part of the process of redefining the war. From being a fight to save the Union into a fight to save the Union and free millions of enslaved Americans. But it was even more than that. It really was a fight, as he says at the very end, to say, you know, government of the people, by the people, for the people. It says, shall not perish from this earth.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't say from this country. He says from this earth.
Earth, right.
And, yeah. And there's a reason for that. I mean, Lincoln knew that, you know, the United States at that time was less than 100 years old, very young, and that grand experiment in self-rule was still young, and it was being tested in a very hard way. And that the vast majority of humanity had lived without much freedom. They lived under the rule of kings or emperors or tyrants, and the world had its eyes on this war and was waiting to see what would happen. And Lincoln knew that if the Union fractured, if this fight for freedom failed, that it would be a severe blow to the hopes of freedom for people around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that it might, you know, this grand experiment, if it was snuffed out, that it might be snuffed out around the world for a long time. So he knew that this was a fight that had global implications, and it is to this day that fight has global implications. That's why this speech is immortal and still speaks to us today.
Yeah, it's in the I think, second sentence of the Gettysburg. By the way, did you have to memorize the Gettysburg Address when you were a kid?
Fourth grade, Mrs. Cheney.
There you go.
Everybody in the classroom had to stand up.
We don't do it anymore.
You had to take a day.
You had to do it.
Every student had to take a day and stand up and recite. Do you think they're still doing it?
No, I don't think they're still teaching it. Because Lincoln, in his second sentence, it's an interesting use of language that he engages. He says, we are engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation or any nation conceived this way can endure. This was a test.
Right.
We were being tested.
It was still a test. I think it was Alan Gelzo, the great Lincoln historian, I believe, who said this was, it was the final exam in some ways, although because it wasn't that final. Of democracy, like I said, it was still that great experiment in self-rule. You know, there were a lot of people in Europe who were looking at this, and around the world,
right?
Who were thinking, it was just the analogy I make when I tell. It's hard for us to conceive what a radical transformation this idea of self-rule was back in 1776, which is what, of course, Lincoln is harkening back to. People just did not think that people could rule themselves. And it's all, today, this is the analogy I make. Today, we just naturally assume that, rightfully in our case, that kids need parents when they grow up.
Right.
You know, people, they need at least a mother and father, one or the other, but hopefully both. But they need parents to guide them. Suppose if we made the assertion, no, kids don't need parents, forget that. They don't need, just shove them out the door as soon as they're born.
Mm-hmm.
They can grow up by themselves.
Bird out of the nest.
The idea that people could govern themselves without the paternal guidance of a king or an emperor was just as radical at that time. Most people thought that's just absurd. You can't do that. So this really was a grand experiment that was still going on in 1863, and it had to prove itself.
Alexander Hamilton raises that very point early on in the very first Federalist, right, where he asks whether societies of men are capable or not of establishing government from reflection and choice, or whether they are forever destined to depend on accident and force. And accident and force, of course, would be every other government until ours, right, one that was either by the divine right of kings or bloodlines, right? The thing getting to, I think, in the Gettysburg, because there were an awful lot of battles in the in the Civil War. Gettysburg is the one. Is it the most visited of the Civil War battlefields? I'm guessing it is, but I don't know. You would know.
Well, I assume it is.
I presume it
largest
is.
Largest and grandest. And,
I would I'm presume sure it is. And what people, I think, missed or still maybe miss or don't think enough about with regard to Lincoln is that, yes, as you point out, he was originally speaking to the North. But yes, as you then conclude, all of mankind, the whole world. And this was a problem he had even convincing his own generals of. The story is told that General Meade telegraphed the president after the battle that at least they, quote, drove the invader from our soil, right? You know this story. And Lincoln turned to, was it John Hay, one of his secretaries?
Like,
and he said, when will my generals ever get it into their heads the whole country is our soil, right?
He never let go of that notion that it was, that we're all one country, we're in this together. You know, he refused to recognize that the South had actually seceded. He said, they are out of their proper practical relationship with the Union. That's like double speak I've ever heard of it. But he just didn't want to give in, and he called Southerners my dissatisfied fellow countrymen.
Right.
But he really was about the Union and about unity.
Now, you've read more about
one country.
You go ahead. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, it's all one country because we're all bound together by this founding principle.
Right, with a founding principle. Yeah. The father of all moral principle, as Lincoln would speak about our Declaration, right? Now, you've probably read more about Lincoln in writing the book that you wrote. And let me mention it again. Of course, it's Old Abe, a novel. We're talking to John Cribb. I just got an email from someone whose birthday is today, and he said this is the greatest birthday gift he's ever had, your interview, John. So that's nice.
Thank you.
But the question I have for you is, having as someone who has read probably more about Lincoln than anyone else right now, is did he know that this less than 300-word speech, what is it, about 272 words, did he know the impact and import it would have? And before you answer that, I have to take a break. I want to come back on that with you, John Cribb, right after the break. What did Lincoln know about what he was saying? Because you can sit down and read Lincoln's speeches, read the debates, read his speeches, and you can make a whole night of it, and it's some of the most beautiful stuff you'll ever read, ever. Did he know that? Did he know that he was writing, as one of his eulogists said, for the ages? We'll be right back with more from John Cribb. Welcome back to the Seth Liebson Show. It's a delight on this November 19th, the anniversary of the Gettysburg Address, to have with us John Cribb, author, brand new book, Old Abe, a novel. John, did Abraham Lincoln know in the Gettysburg Address, or perhaps in his other speeches or writings, that he was speaking to the ages? Did he know he would be this revered and this studied by at least some of us? We'll get to that in a minute. But did he know the impact he was having, or the times that were being defined by the Civil War in his presidency?
Well, I think he knew fairly quickly that the speech was very well received and was, you know, was here to stay. He spent a good bit of time on it, I think, thinking about it and getting it right. He was invited to give just a few just kind of summary remarks or appropriate remarks, as the invitation said, at Gettysburg Cemetery. You know, he went up to help dedicate the cemetery.
Yeah, he was not the longest speaker there, was he?
No. With Edward Everett.
Spent
2 hours speaking.
Right.
Yeah. And the point of it all was to bury about 3,500 plots there that they were filling in, you know, burying the dead from the battle. I mean, it was 4.5 months after the battle, but they were still burying the dead there.
Right.
And he wrote about half of it before he went up, and he wrote about the other half or so when he got to Gettysburg the night before, and then he finished it up that morning. But he had been thinking about it for a long time. And these were thoughts that had been knocking around in his head for, you know, even before he was president. And when he gave the speech, his good friend, Ward Hill Lamon, who we called Hill, and was serving as the marshal ceremonies. He claimed that when Lincoln sat back down, that the crowd, there was a silence, and Lincoln said, "Lamon, that speech won't scour."
Mm-hmm.
That was a metaphor. It was a reference to farming, reference that a plow, you know, a good plow would scour the land. That would win. But then shortly after that silence, a thunderous applause started. And the reception of the speech was good from the beginning. Now, not universally. The press was every bit as partisan, as if not more partisan than as it is today. And the Democratic papers, of course, didn't like it. The Chicago Times, the Democrat paper, said that the cheek of every American should tingle with shame at the dishwatery flat utterances of the president at Gettysburg.
They were wrong then, just as they are now. Fake news then as now. Yeah,
right. Fake news, I know. The London Times, you know, trashed it too. On the other hand, the Springfield Republican in Massachusetts said it was a perfect gem of a speech. Pretty quickly, the nation began to realize that this is a really, really great speech. And it was put into anthologies and school readers, you know, pretty fast. And so I think Lincoln knew he had hit home after giving the speech.
So what's weird and brings us really to today, and the thing that, you know, I can't get out of my mind is what we saw some of this summer on the streets of America, but what has been going on in the academy for a generation or two prior to that is the denigration not only of what Lincoln was speaking to the year 1776, but they're going after Lincoln himself. Several of his statues were taken down. And it's a really odd place because we wonder where we go from here. If we don't have the Declaration of Independence and we don't have Lincoln, what do we have? I think we have anarchy, but you tell me your thoughts on this.
No, I think we do. I think we have what Lincoln talked about in his young Young Men's Lyceum speech. And what we're missing, I think, a big part of the problem, it's not the whole problem, but it's part of the problem, is we're missing that historical consciousness and that informed patriotism that you talked about in your monologue and that Ronald Reagan talked about, you know, in his farewell address to the nation. There's just our schools have failed our young people. They don't know really who Lincoln was, which is a big reason I wrote my novel. So there's no historical context. So they do things like, I don't know if you saw that the University of Wisconsin and Madison last month, the student body government, from what I've read, I assume it's true, I don't think I've read these days, but they unanimously voted to remove or take down or you know, move someplace else the famous statue of Lincoln there on campus that, you know, students have loved for,
I did not know that.
For decades.
Wow.
Yeah. Because, I mean, basically, I'm paraphrasing it for you, but he was not woke enough to them. And it's just an incredibly self-centered, you know, view of the world on the part of these young people and ignorant. And I do think that the university has said, no, we're not doing that, from what I understand.
Well, but the university is one thing,
and
other places are other things. In Washington, D.C., there was an effort to remove, and I think the mayor took it seriously and put together a commission to study the removal of the Freeman statue of Lincoln, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. New York's the same way. They're talking about taking down all kinds of statues and renaming schools.
Don't you find this scarily Soviet, Marxist, and Orwellian? Don't you find this really a very frightening time?
Yeah, it really is. It's a very Soviet type of approach to take. But you know, one this goes back to the Gettysburg Address. I mean, Lincoln was arguing that each generation has to rededicate itself to those principles. It's a generation by generation thing, right? And if they don't, then the experiment fails.
We fail the test. I think the test at Gettysburg, the test of the Civil War, is the test facing us now. But when we have movements in history sponsored by, promoted by, paid for by the NEA and the New York Times to change the 4 score and 7 to something like 1619, I mean, I think we become totally unmoored from any notion of freedom and equality. As Lincoln, as Frederick Douglass, as Martin Luther King redounded to and everything they strove for. And it's just this weird irony where in the name of civil rights, we affix our nation not to freedom and equality, but to slavery. It's just a very odd, ironic thing to me.
Yeah, it's all turned upside down, isn't it?
Yeah.
It really is. It's an argument for totalitarianism.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And that's what
which is what Lincoln was arguing.
Exactly right. The opposite of totalitarianism is government of the people, by the people, and for the people. Well, John, you've been generous with your time on a busy day like today, and just love your book. I'll mention it once more, Old Abe, a novel. You don't have to take my word for it on how good it is. The Vice President of the United States, a Lincoln scholar in his own right, said it's the best book on Lincoln he's read. John Cribb, happy Gettysburg Address Day. Congrats on the book, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you, buddy.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. God bless you. 602-508-0960, your show from here on out. We'll be right back.